record is particularly good for the youngsters.
Now you get right to the procedure.
September the 9th, 2002, should be a date which all students remember. It marks the anniversary of the date when student activists at Concordia University in Montreal shut down a planned speech and rally with former Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. In the aftermath, there are many lessons to be learned, not just from this demonstration, but from countless other student demonstrations for social justice and improved education. We spoke with Dave Bernans, who's a researcher and archivist with the Concordia Student Union, and Aaron Matte, a former executive on the Concordia Student Union on one of its more radical slates. They will speak to student activism at Concordia and how organizational models there can apply to student activists in any campus. First, we'll hear from Dave Bernans.
The more drums we have in our kit, the more jobs we can handle.
We're going to take a break here.
Could you highlight some of the key moments in Concordia's history of student activism for us?
Sure. Well, I mean, I guess what everybody remembers is the Computer Center riots of 1969. They sort of, I guess, were the Netanyahu demonstration of the 1960s, and that they sort of created there was a huge level of media attention focused on Concordia, but really they're also similar in that most people didn't really understand all the issues that surrounded these riots and why something so dramatic happened. There's a lot deeper history of activism at Concordia than just sort of going and looking at the latest these huge demonstrations or these violent confrontations. In the case of the Computer Center riots, there were leading up to that, there were years of organizing and fighting racism on campus, especially with the Caribbean community on campus at Concordia. And you know, that's in 68 and 69, and then through the 70s, Concordia was a hotbed of activism, especially involving the activism around the Vietnam War and whatnot. The 90s, in the mid 90s, when there was a move to increase tuition in Quebec, there was a wave of student strikes all across Quebec, and Concordia was involved in that as well. More recently, there was a student strike in 1999 at Concordia, a three-day student strike against a non-tuition fee, administrative fee, because it was felt that that fee increase was a violation of the tuition freeze that had been won in the mid-90s with the wave of student strikes across Quebec. And then, of course, most recently, the September 9th, 2002 demonstration against Netanyahu, which again, like the Computer Center riots, was preceded by years of organizing, especially within the group Palestinian Solidarity for Palestinian Human Rights, that organizing around the activism connected to solidarity with the Second Intifada in Palestine and with the struggle for self-determination of people in Palestine, and sort of the counter-organizing of people who wanted to support the State of Israel and those people who brought Netanyahu to Concordia. So, and activism, you know, hasn't stopped. It's been, I guess, sort of curtailed a bit in the past couple of years, but there's still a lot happening on campus. There's these weekly showings. Cinema Politica has these weekly film showings where they usually get 500 people to come and see politically progressive films on campus, and there's a lot of activism around SPHR has exhibits and all kinds of things. They've had mock checkpoints on campus and whatnot. And this in spite of the fact that the university administration keeps trying to stop STHR from having any events on campus through making them by making them go through all kinds of bureaucratic hoops to satisfy security that there won't be any problems.
Now, I wanted to come back to that issue of the administration's response in a little bit, but maybe first, looking back at this history of activism, the key moments that you were bringing up in the last 40 years, what would you say it is about Concordia specifically that made it a more radical school?
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess, Concordia, if you compare it to McGill, which is probably your point of comparison of a lot of your listeners, this Concordia is a much more, working class university. It's a university where traditionally it's been, a second choice or a third choice after schools like McGill for students from working class families. In the 1950s, there was a quota, an openly anti-Semitic quota system at McGill where if you were Jewish, you had a very hard time getting in. They would only let in a certain number of Jewish students. So Concordia, or Sir George Williams at that time, it wasn't Concordia yet, was the place where Jewish people, especially in Montreal, went to go to university because they couldn't get into McGill. In the 60s, that changed, and Concordia started attracting less and less Jewish students as the parents of children that the parents couldn't go to McGill, but they sure wanted their students to go there. So there started to be less Jewish students and more students from other backgrounds. And in the 60s, it was a lot of students from the Caribbean came. And that's where the anti-racist student activism of that period and culminating in the Computer Center riots in 1969 came from. And in the 90s, a lot of students from Middle Eastern background, Arab and Muslim students, have been coming to Concordia. So there's both a class and a racial dimension to the activism at Concordia.
And would you say that it's these same kind of class and racial issues that are driving a lot of the activism we're seeing today on campus?
Sure, and I guess it sort of combines with the so-called anti-globalization movement, or as it's called in French, the ultra-mondialisation, which is a little bit more correct because it's saying that you're trying to get something other than the economic globalization that's being fed to us by or agreements like the FTAA. This kind of activism is sort of mixing in with a lot of other things, and there's also a lot of environmental or ecological kind of activism on campus now, a lot more than there was in the 60s.
Now, of course, very central to the issue of student activism is always how any given administration will respond to the activism happening on campus. So maybe you could speak to a little bit of how the administration at Concordia has responded to this activism over the years.
Mm-hmm. Well, the response has been fairly consistent in that it's sort of hot and cold, or quite often it's referred to as a kind of a good cop, bad cop routine, where when students complain about, for instance, in the 1960s, they were complaining about racist grading practices of a particular Professor Anderson, a zoology professor there at Sir George Williams, and so they were complaining about it, and they were told go through the complaints process, jump through all the bureaucratic hoops, which they did for a year. Evidence was lost. The hearing process was obviously going to be a whitewash, so students were trying to create some other kind of process and trying to get the administration on board, and the administration strung them along for as long as they possibly could with this kind of good cop routine, and then when it became clear that that this was not going to work, then they brought in the RCMP. Three students were charged with extortion and forcible, kidnapping, forcible confinement, whatever, of an administrator, Eventually, of course, the riot cops being called in, which is the end of the Computer Center riots in February of 1969. So, and the same sort of pattern you can see happen recently with the rise of activism in 1999 and 2000. The administration was sort of playing the good cop and allowing students to organize and mobilize, and just hoping that if they negotiated with them, that things would sort of calm down. It didn't work. Things kept building up, and students continued to push for. It wasn't enough that they stopped increasing the administrative fee. They kept pushing to reduce the administrative fee and get rid of it, get rid of all the corporations on campus that were serving food and just have the people's potato, to get rid of Zoom Media, the advertising on campus, through all kinds of, overt kind of lobbying, but also sort of covert guerrilla tactics of defacing advertising or encouraging sit-ins and that kind of thing. And eventually they started to resort to the iron fist again, and you had the arrest the expulsion of Tom Kiefer and Latham Maroof in 2001, similar to the approach that was taken to Caribbean students in the 1960s of sort of targeting the quote unquote ringleaders, and Jaggi Singh again was another target. Who's not even a student at Concordia, but it was considered okay. It's a lot of off-campus people agitating and trying to get our good Concordia students involved in this terrible activism. So they figured if they targeted some ringleaders that this would get things under control. And again, that wasn't enough. So there was a complete ban on free speech for 2 months in Concordia, where you couldn't have any tables or information tables. You couldn't give out information about any issue. You couldn't do any political organizing. And not only that, but there were simply no discussions allowed on anything to do with the Middle East for a period of 2 months. The response has been sort of, in normal times, there's not really any need to be draconian, but when students are effectively organizing, they tend to answer that with repressive force.
Now, what would you say some of the motivating factors behind these crackdowns on the part of administration would be?
From what I can see now, there has been huge cuts to public funding for universities. So universities having, not just Concordia, but all universities have increasingly turned to the private sector for support, and that involves getting donations from large corporate donors. And when Concordia started to become known as Gaza U, it turned off a lot of donors, in that they didn't want to be associated with a university that had such in-your-face kind of activism that was challenging corporate rule. Corporations like, for instance, Pratt & Whitney, one of Concordia's partners that has profited from the bombing of Palestinians because they make the engines for F-16s that are used by the Israeli military to bomb Palestinians, and other, I guess, aerospace manufacturers that are connected to Concordia. They didn't look on this kind of activism with they didn't particularly like this kind of activism or the kind of reputation that Concordia was getting, and were not particularly wanting to be associated with Concordia. And so there's actually been comments by the key fundraisers at Concordia saying that donors are telling them, if you don't get your act together, we're going to be pulling our funding. You're not going to be getting any more donations from us. So that certainly was a key motivating factor, and it can be seen by the when you had the moratorium. The organization that put that moratorium in place, the Board of Governors, is a highly is primarily corporate representatives. There's representatives from Montreal's corporate elite on the board of governors. Most of this of the seats are reserved for what are called community members at large, and those at large community members are almost all representatives from various executives of various major corporations in Montreal. They put that in place, and then it was challenged not just by students, because students are not the only ones that are concerned about issues like free speech, but by faculty. The Senate said this was not a good idea. The Senate is not the highest governing body of the university. It's the highest academic governing body, so it decides things like curriculum and whatnot, but it recommended to the Board of Governors to end the moratorium on free speech because it was not a good condition. It was not conducive to a proper kind of academic environment. Since this is, they're the highest academic body, they said, you know, please, this is making our job harder. But this moratorium on free speech in a university where we're supposed to be, you know, being able to look at whatever kind of issues without any kind of barriers to discussing them, and the Senate passed a motion saying, please remove this ban on free speech, and that was a Senate that is dominated by faculty as well as some staff representatives. So you can see where the really where the pressure to crack down on students is coming from, is from the corporate sector.
Now, maybe shifting our attention a bit towards the Concordia Student Union, the CSU. As we know, in the past, the CSU has tended to be more radical or progressive, but there was certainly a change with a new CSU elected after the Netanyahu demonstration. Maybe you could just comment briefly on this new CSU and, you know, what influenced the change there and what their approach to politics on campus has been like.
I mean, it depends on who you talk to, what, you know, you, their ideology or quite often they'll claim not to have any ideology, but what their political position is. If you talk to people that are some of their allies in Hillel and so on, you'll find that they are specifically saying that this is good. The evolution slate is good because that's the name of the slate that's taken power over the past 2 years. That they're good because they are against activism, any form of activism. They're anti-activist. Whereas if you talk to some of the people who are in evolution, the executives or some of the counselors, they will claim that they are not anti-activist, that they are in fact they want to put activism in its proper place in the university, and that past CSU administrations were too activist, and that they are trying to get that under control and trying to allow students to be activists without having it thrown in their face, and that their motto is students first, activism second. So it depends, I guess, on who you talk to, what the take of the new executive is towards this kind of thing. But they're definitely, everybody in evolution considers the Netanyahu demonstration to be a huge fiasco, and that it showed how terrible the activists were at Concordia, and that now things are much better because there are more, I guess, cooler heads are prevailing.
Maybe just to wrap up, what do you foresee being some of the important issues for student activists in the coming year or two?
Well, you know, in the 1990s, there was a huge wave of student activism because of the Quebec government's successful attempt to raise tuition. It was successful to a point, and when that point was reached, the anger kind of boiled over, and students were able to force the government to accept a tuition freeze. Similarly, now it's not a question of tuition, but there's a question of other fees. At Concordia and McGill, we're looking at huge fee increases for international students, and there's also the cuts to the loans and bursaries program, so that there are less and less bursaries available for students from low-income families, and they're increasingly having to take on higher and higher debt loads. And that is pushing not only university students but CEGEP students as well across the province to mobilize. And so we're likely to see some large-scale student actions all across Quebec, and I guess Concordia and McGill will be part of that.
Okay, well, we've been on the phone with Dave Bernans, and I'd like to thank you for taking the time with us today.
Been a pleasure.
Formerly an executive of the Concordia Student Union, about student activism at Concordia, specifically in the time that you were there and on the CSU. So maybe just to start, what were some of the major political issues that the CSU took on while you were there as an executive?
Well, there was a lot, because there's a lot of different communities at Concordia, and there are a lot of different interests and sort of issues that everyone was concerned with. So we were concerned with battling racism on campus, and that meant sort of organizing assemblies and calling for an inquiry into the problem on campus, specifically against, as racism, you know, affected Arabs and Muslims, because after, especially September 11th, there was sort of, there was a, you know, as we all know, there was a pretty big backlash against Arabs and people were racially profiled, and that sort of played out at Concordia, where you had a very vocal and active Arab student body, and so we were trying to just support them and call for, you know, and support their right to organize, because they were cracked down on. We also were involved in sort of world issues, so obviously we took considered a radical stance on the Israel-Palestine conflict. We supported Palestinian rights, which aren't respected by people with power, so that was controversial. We organized to oppose the Iraq War, which was a major issue when I was on the CSU executive. And basically any activist issue we tried to align with and we tried to support.
Mm-hmm. Now, I mean, with a lot of conservative university campuses, within their student unions or whatever body represents the students, there tends to be kind of a general feeling that if it's not an issue specifically related to the students, it shouldn't be one that's covered by that given student union. What was it about the Concordia Student Union while you were with them that made you take on issues?
Right. Well, there's two things. I mean, one, I don't think our attention on Middle East issues such as Iraq and Palestine would have been as great were it not for a pretty large Arab student body. But when you couple that with the fact that, you know, that, I mean, if you're a progressive, you obviously care about these issues and you recognize the injustice. And so when you have people like or groups like Solidarity for Palestinian Human Rights, SPHR, organizing, you just sort of naturally align with them because they're, you know, doing the work on the subject and they're doing important work. And so that's how it emerged, is that, me being Jewish, it's the Israel issue has always been an important one to me. And, it's just something that just was natural to become involved with. So, I mean, yeah, it had to do with the fact that it wouldn't have happened were there not just a really strong and committed group like SPHR on campus. I think especially now, you know, everywhere you have progressives, I mean, all it takes is a little bit of work and organizing, and these movements grow, and, you know, people are taking stands on important issues, even if they don't necessarily directly affect the sort of larger student body.
What factors would you say it was that really made activism flourish at Concordia?
Well, you just had people that were really, really committed. I mean, and it wasn't just to one issue. I mean, you know, on a sort of different vein, I mean, like a small group of people started this sort of anarchist vegan collective called the People's Potato, which, you know, today, about 4 years later, I guess, serves, you know, hundreds of meals a day, free meals to to Concordia students. Mm-hmm. You know, so that's just an example of the type of will and spirit there was there. People were just committed to these causes, and we were very effective. And whether it was, you know, whether it was people who were serving food and making this vegan collective, or whether it was people, you know, trying to publicize issues around the Israeli occupation of Palestine, you know, we were just effective and we were committed and effective.
Maybe to shift focus a bit to September 9th and what happened around there, because I think for a lot of people that was definitely kind of a turning point with activism at Concordia. And the CSU offered support in certain capacities. What was it that made you want to get involved personally with that mobilization?
Well, there's many levels there. I mean, on the most fundamental personal level, I mean, you know, you had the situation where Benjamin Netanyahu was coming, who was the former prime minister of Israel, which already is a pretty, you know, it's a pretty unpleasant a distinction to hold. It means you're probably responsible for many atrocities, as is the case with him, and actually in a very extreme way. He was one of the most extreme leaders of a very extreme government and a very terrible occupation. So, and the fact is he was coming to Concordia sort of, and he was welcomed with, you know, basically a big red carpet. And if this world were like remotely fair, he's the kind of person who would be in jail and not welcome as a statement. And so for me personally, I just felt the need to oppose that. I'm also Jewish, and I don't like to see people like him speaking on my behalf and speaking for the Jewish people and saying that mass murder and racism is what we're about. So that's what brought me there. And it was also, you know, just to support the Arab students who felt especially slighted by his presence. I mean, if they ever tried to bring, you know, a Palestinian who had, you know, far less blood on his or her hands than Netanyahu, I mean, it wouldn't even be a question. Like, they'd be shut down. So there's a certain amount of racism there. So I wanted to go there and just, you know, oppose his presence. I didn't feel like I wanted to shut him down. On that issue, I sort of diverged from my fellow protesters. I didn't believe in our right to shut anybody down, and I think that was a mistake. But certainly, I deeply, you know, hated and still do hate Netanyahu, and I think his presence was pretty offensive.
I guess in the aftermath, how do you feel that demonstration changed activism at Concordia and on campuses elsewhere?
Well, this is tricky because I think it had, you know, in some ways really positive, but also actually really negative effects. Positively, it sort of certainly brought a lot of attention to the issue, and it showed that people are mobilizing and people are angry, and that it's extremely offensive to bring this racist murderer and sort of bring him, you know, like bring him into a campus that's pretty politically active and celebrate him. And it showed that students and Palestinians are gonna stand up to that. And so the fact that empowered a lot of people, it empowered activists or helped empower them, and sort of, I think, provided a pretty strong degree of inspiration to people who were organizing, I think, was important. I don't think we should have any illusions over what September 9th meant. You know, it was positive in some ways, and it provided people with inspiration. And I know that the Palestinians, I think, from what I remember, felt really empowered and happy, and that's a good thing. But the downside is that instead of, I think, acting more on what made us feel good, we actually hurt our cause.
Given some of those things you mentioned, I mean, obviously in the more negative aspects of that demonstration, what would you say are some of the challenges that lie ahead for activists at Concordia?
Well, I think it's the same for activists anywhere. Is that there are plenty of opportunities to in which the right wing, in which supporters of violence and supporters of state violence and oppression are going to come and they'll be, you know, and sort of be in our face, and there'll be plenty of opportunities to sort of shut them down if we want to. And basically, to whatever they do, act emotionally and sort of act based on this academic set of principles. So, for example, we think that Netanyahu is a war criminal, but the question in an academic sense, I mean, maybe one can argue that it's fine to shut him down, but we actually have to think of, what I think we have to do is think of a world in which our actions have consequences. And many times, I think, usually whenever you act upon what makes you feel good about yourself. So, for example, it may make you feel good to shut down a racist speaker, but in many cases, that doesn't translate to a tactical gain. So I think we always have to remember the fact that we're actually in the real world. Our actions have consequences. And when we're formulating plans for protests or campaigns, whatever, we have to think about what the consequences of our actions are going to be. Mm-hmm. And that may mean, in some case, putting aside some principles. Because acting sometimes upon just raw principle and not thinking about the tactical consequences sometimes actually results in huge losses for the principles that we believe in, you know. Mm-hmm. As was the case, I think, at Concordia. So I think those are some of the things that we need to start considering.
Maybe just to wrap up, given the fact that there's a new CSU who have a largely different kind of political mandate, uh-huh, than the one that you were a part of, where do you see activism right now at Concordia?
Well, at Concordia, there were elections last spring, like the most recent elections. And this time, unlike last year when the left got creamed, we actually did pretty good, and it was a pretty close election. But still, the sort of apolitical candidates who ran on a similar platform to the previous years, they won. And I think because of that, there's some discouragement. But I think what we need to remember is that the answers to, you know, and the best achievements of activism aren't made through, like, who gets in, how much power we have, whether it's in student government. I think that applies everywhere. I think the best activist achievements were not done sort of top down by, you know, by the small cabal of sort of lefty CSU people, but just by activists, you know, some in the CSU who organized and who got mass support for their initiatives, whether it was a general assembly on racism or whether it was starting a vegan soup kitchen. So I think that's in terms of where it's going, I don't know, but I think as long as we remember that we don't need necessarily to control student government to get things done, and we sort of go back to, you know, organizing and reaching out to as many people as possible and getting them involved and being self-conscious to not alienate people and sort of think of ourselves as sort of holier-than-thou activists, which I think was a problem. For us, it was a problem for me, I know. Then I think we're probably on a pretty good path.
Thank you.
Sure, thank you.
This piece has been produced for the CKUT Community News Collective in Montreal by Aaron Lakoff.